I'll call this meeting of the Everett Community Roundtable Starlight, the order here on January 2025. Welcome to January. End of the year. Let me start off in the meeting by just reminding everyone of our mission here, and to a great extent we definitely passed a number of milestones to make this very prophetic. Provide the City of Charlotte Aviation Department and the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, with a broad-based community input and airport-related noise impacts and define, where possible, practical solutions and recommendations for the FAA to consider when determining aircraft operating procedures at Charlotte Douglas International Airport. That's our mission, what we hope to get done this evening, and the rest of our time. Jumping in, I don't see any elected officials or representatives in the room. If anyone know of one, I'll buy it, or... Thank you very much. And next up, we could jump into our...
Right, the introductions.
Introductions, sorry, thank you. I skipped those introductions. Okay. Can we go around the room? Starting with our member, Sally, you want to start us off?
Sally Brown, Corridors.
And yeah, just say your name and part of the city, you sir.
Sally Brown, Cornelius.
And I'm Phil Gustman, Steve's District 1.
Mark Loughlin, the Palatine area.
Sharon Warren, Mecklenburg County District 4. Diane Dasher, York County.
Jacob Pollock, York County.
And I'll just let me know for the record that Elma Wright, at large, is here to step down the room for a
moment. Matthew Reese, Airport Noise Abatement Specialist.
Kevin Hennessy, Airport.
Stuart Hare, Airport.
Hey, Chris Moore, Airport.
Thank you all for introducing yourselves as well. Are there any FAA staff who are participating remotely?
No.
Okay. Tracy, could you introduce yourself, please?
Good evening, everyone. I'm so sorry I can't be there with you in person. As I noted earlier, I'm in D.C., attended the event at USDOT today. But I am with American Airlines and very grateful to be with you this new year. Happy New Year, everyone.
Thank you. And is Jean participating remotely? Jean?
Yes, Jean Rangel, technical consultant to the ACR and attending remotely as well.
All right, I appreciate that. And I'm Ed Gagnon, CSS. Kathy, could you introduce yourself as well?
Kathy Schrader, CSS.
All right, thank you for that. And I believe we do have one other person who's participating remotely, James Thomas Brown. Or Courtney James Thomas Brown. I'm not sure if that's a public attendee. So thank you for joining and listening in on the meeting as well. We did have a couple people who just walked in. One was introduced by Phil, but I will allow her to introduce herself again to members. So Thelma, if you could introduce yourself, and just a reminder for everybody in the room, when you use these handheld mics, press the button, it'll have a green light, and you can go ahead and share, and then press it again to turn it off, and the speaker will be activated. So Thelma, if you could introduce yourself. Thank you, Thelma. And Sam?
I'm Sam Stowe, representing Delsey County.
All right, perfect. Thank you all for doing the introductions. As we like to do, we're going to go through some not-so-exciting but very important logistics for the meeting. If you are participating remotely, please use the raise. The hand function, it's at the top of the screen on Teams, and then CLT will call on you to speak when the time is available. They'll keep you on mute otherwise. If you do have sentiments that you'd like to share via the chat, please go ahead and put them in the chat. We do get a download of the chat after each meeting so that we can incorporate those on the minutes. If you're on the phone in particular, please share your name before you speak just so we know who is speaking. Our meeting is scheduled to go for about 2 hours. I don't know if it'll go longer than that or that long, just kind of setting everybody's expectations. CLT is recording this session as well. Again, just make sure we're capturing everything in the minutes along with the chat. So what I'd like to do is to just go over a couple ground rules that we always like to emphasize at the start of these meetings. And essentially, we want these meetings to be healthy, productive, and effective. By healthy, we want to make sure we have good, solid questions, good, solid discussion. Let's focus on what the issues are and the solutions are. Try not to make things personal. Try not to take things personal. By productive, we want to stay on task, stay on focus, whatever that particular agenda item is. And then effective, make sure that we're focusing on those things deal with identifying, implementing solutions to improve the noise situation in the community. So with all that having been said, Phil, I will hand it back off to you to ask for approval of the October minutes.
All right. The minutes are in the packet of information, or if you haven't reviewed them earlier, click what's there. But I am looking for a motion to approve our meeting minutes from our...
And just to reiterate, Phil, the minutes were sent out with the invite. We don't have the minutes printed in the hard copy.
Okay.
I mean, it just says right under.
I remember the minutes were received earlier. Anyone have a motion to approve this? Okay. And the second moved by Thelma. Oh, Jerry.
It's so moved. Diane.
Diane. Sorry.
I know she's Martin Phil.
Correct. It's really don't help us. Welcome to the party, guys.
Thank you.
Awkwardly moved by Diane and seconded by Sharon. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? We have approved the minutes.
All right. Thank you, Phil. And just to describe the meeting handout that's in front of everybody, if you received an email yesterday or today with the handout, this is the exact same document. When we describe the page numbers, if you can look at the number in the upper right-hand corner of the document, that's what we'll be referring to as we go through. Page one is just the handout list. Page two is our agenda for today. Pages three and four are the membership of the ACR and some of the key stakeholders as well. And page five are guidelines for public speakers. So I'm going to turn to CLT right now to see if we have any public speakers for today's meeting. We don't. Okay.
We did have one person sign up, but they are not here. They've just gone out to inform them that they're not in attendance.
Okay. All right. Thank you all for sharing that. I appreciate that. So in terms of going into the agenda, the next item on the agenda is agenda item number three, which is update on moving forward, engaging, and improve. We're going to start by getting an update from CLT on the Part 150 process and the ACR mission, and then we'll have some ACR review of the Part 150 process. But prior to getting into that, Tracy, I think you wanted to talk a little bit about Part 150 before I hand it off to Stuart. So the floor is yours, Tracy.
Sorry, couldn't come off mute. Before we get started on a recap of the December activities, I just wanted to take a moment on behalf of the American Airlines team to thank the ACR for their diligence throughout this process and thoughtful questions and engagement. As you noted from the council discussion ahead of December 9th and much of the media interest, this was not a rubber stamp. And there was a lot of, some very important questions that needed to be asked and answered. And I want to thank Phil and members of the committee that spent a lot of time and effort to answer and address some of those questions and concerns from members of council. And just to thank you all again for your thoughtful engagement. I know it was, it's been a challenging discussion internally for this group. American is pleased with the outcome and the opportunity to reset on a more modern approach to noise mitigation in this market that will, you know, fundamentally change airspace, we believe, for the future of Charlotte and its long-term airspace impacts across the community. But beyond that, I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you. Again, I know how difficult this process was for you all. I want to thank Phil directly for taking the time, and Ed, who attended the meeting with Phil, but for Phil to get up and speak to council, for all of the questions and time that he spent answering with members of council. I heard from those members of council that your input, your feedback was very helpful and critical to them understanding this work. But there are more questions to be answered, and you know, certainly more due diligence for the council, for the community, for the airport, for all of the business stakeholders at the airport as we go into the you know, the EA, assuming FAA approval. So anyways, before we get into the next steps, I just wanted to offer my gratitude and to say on behalf of American, we're very thankful for the effort that you all put in to helping the community and city council better understand this very complex federal approval process and the efforts that have been ongoing over the last few years with the ACR at the table. So all that being said, I just wanted to go on record and offer my appreciation on behalf of the company and you know, again, say thank you.
All right, thank you for sharing that, Tracy. I appreciate it. And I'm going to hand it off to Stuart to talk about the CLT update on the Part 50 process as well as the ACR mission.
Hey, Ed, I'm going to step in just for the 150 update. But first, I want to echo Tracy's sentiments. CLT, we're sincerely appreciative. Not just the hard work for the 150, but all the hard work over the years. So, really, again, thank you for all of your input and all of your long hours. Truly appreciate it. Specifically, the 150, obviously, we've all talked about the big milestone that was reached in December, so thank you. Council approving us submitting it to the FAA. Currently, our consultant is working with the FAA on a few technical matters, and then once we get through that, then we will officially submit it. Right now, the time frame is late winter for submittal, and that puts us in late fall for approval. So, unfortunately, I don't have better information than that right now because it's kind of a moving target. But as we start getting things plugged in, we'll let you know. And I'm going to turn it over to Stuart now for some official updates.
Thanks, Kevin. And I asked Kevin to do that update for y'all because I don't know that everyone knows that Kevin's been one of the project managers on the Part 150 project. And so this was one of his core job responsibilities over these past couple of years is being the community and the noise expert for the Part 150 process. And so just wanted to acknowledge that's why Kevin is who I always refer to when it comes to Part 150 technical questions because he's the one doing the work on it. I'm not. I have blue budgets and that type of stuff. But it's a strategy and that other fun stuff. So that's why Kevin provided the Part 150 update. As y'all probably are well aware, we stood up the Airport Community Roundtable, and a couple of y'all joined us about 8 years ago now. And we had been really charged and challenged by FAA regional staff to create a community-facing noise group. They didn't really provide us a brief on that. There wasn't really a playbook that they were looking for. There wasn't clear expectations of how it would be formed or what it would accomplish or what its lifespan would be. But we went to D.C. and sat in on the longstanding noise group there in D.C. I think Tracy helped facilitate that introduction for us. We benchmarked a couple other noise groups that existed around the nation and came up with the mission statement and the membership structure for the Airport Community Roundtable. And one of the big things is what Phil talked about in the kind of convening is broad-based community input in airport-related noise impacts and defined where possible practical solutions and recommendations for the FAA to consider when determining aircraft operating procedures. So you can parse that big phrase apart in a couple different pieces. I kind of break it down into two main pieces.
And this was something that we drafted out, and it has a piece that was about engagement, but about recommendations. And we got engaged on that work, on recommendations. And that led to the slate of recommendations that was put forward, that y'all voted on and approved and put forward. One of them was implemented outside of the Part 150. Some of them are included in the Part 150. We've gotten feedback on 5 of the 6 of them now, and FAA is still working on 6 of those. And so the two sides of that chart were really around engagement and recommendations. And the recommendation slate has moved forward. Now that the Part 150 milestone has been reached, and council has given approval for that to go to the FAA, we're really looking at a better solution than how the ACR is set up right now. Let's be real here, folks. Let's look at our membership. It's dissipated. And engagement has decreased off of it. But we kind of accomplished the other side of that coin. And so as we looked around this past year at the ACR and the future of this body, we wanted to come up with a better solution than it. And so over the next couple of months, me and Kevin and Matt are going to be working on that better solution for the Airport Community Roundtable. We want y'all's involvement. We want y'all to continue to be involved in whatever form this new function looks like. A couple things that we're looking at is, one, we're going to be drafting a new mission statement. I'm going to take first swing at it. Matt's already scheduled us for a working session on Monday to work on it. So we anticipate pretty quickly coming forward with a new mission statement. And that's really going to be the mission of the body is going to be focused on noise impacts, advocacy, and being the technical experts that y'all are. The role of creating a slate of recommendations, that's kind of done. Might that work come up again in the future? Yeah. But we got the Part 150 happening. And then we've got flight procedures that are going to change with commissioning of the new runway in 27. There's talk of FAA doing another airspace modernization. They can find the internal monies for it. There's talk of us doing some major work on our easternmost runway that might change around flight procedures. So there's a lot of changes to flight procedures that are in process. And frankly, we heard loud and clear from the FAA that they don't have a process. They had to design a process on how to consider the slate of recommendations. They don't have a process to consider another slate of recommendations, especially not when there's 150 going to be changing procedures and all the other things that are I articulate. And so we heard loud and clear from them that it's going to be at least multiple years. I don't want to put words in their mouth. I don't want to speak for them. But multiple years, 5-ish years, before they could consider new changes to flight procedures because of all these other things that are queued up to change around flight procedures. And so the better solution that we're going to be looking for is we're going to be focused around how does it impact y'all? Y'all being the advocates for the community and then being the technical experts that you've grown into being on flight procedures and noise impacts across the region. One of the big changes that we're going to look at in this new body is it's not going to be structured as a quasi-legislative body. So right now, those of y'all that like to play politics as a game, like I kind of enjoy doing, you know, watching on the sideline, we're set up kind of like a legislative body. We represent specific districts. We're supposed to be voting for the interests of those districts, and there's a chairperson of that. We follow Robert's Rules of Orders, and so it's kind of structured as a legislative body. And we're thinking, because we're not going to be voting and advancing recommended slates, that there's a different structure, an advisory body structure, is probably the better model for us to look at for the ACR. So that's going to be one of the primary drivers in changing around this mission statement. Another primary driver is going to be around a new membership structure to be defined. I don't know what that looks like yet. We've done no work on this, but we want to have the diverse geographic representation that we have, but we want to have more engagement, more opportunities for engagement. Just very, you know, directly. Courtney has attended so many of these meetings, but yet because he doesn't represent a seat, he doesn't have the ability to actually speak to the body. And that feels like disenfranchisement to me. And so when we think about the new membership structure, I want to be ensured that we have a way to provide the platform to anyone that really cares about this and wants to spend the energy in learning about noise and being the advocate for it. And so that is one of the other big changes that we are going to be putting forward with this new mission statement. Matt's already done legwork on this. We've already received a bunch of applications in. We've got one from Bob Simpwitz, who used to be with the FAA, who's been a great partner of ours for a number of years now throughout the history of the ACR. Well, right now, we don't have a seat to put him on. You know, that's an opportunity. So we have a group of people that want to be able to get engaged with the structure of this new body. So that will be something. Very frankly, I think that the 25 target number was about the right population size. 20 to 25 members is about the max that I found in my experience really works for an advisory body. But, you know, just due to attrition in life and changes, we're way below that now. And so that's one of the reasons why we're talking about coming forward with a better solution in the future. We're not going to lose Ed and Kathy. We're not going to lose Gene. Ed and Kathy, we still want to facilitate these meetings. We're not going in detail and talking about them, of whether we change contracts or, you know, anything like that yet, because there's not much point in talking business until you know what you're talking about. But the whole concept is that we keep having a neutral third party facilitator for us, and that we have the subject matter experts of HMMH as an on-call expert for us to leverage with this. FAA participation, you'll notice no one from the FAA. No one from FAA is here tonight. That is because, very frankly, they were surprised when we spoke with them after the Part 150 went to council. They were surprised that we wanted to keep the body around. And they were ready to stand the body down. And so, because they just don't have the bandwidth, or are not willing to, or able to, whatever, commit the bandwidth for this type of ongoing community-based noise initiative. FAA has always directed airports are responsible for noise in the local community. Their commitment to the body previous was extraordinary, and they are having to take a step back at this point. So that's why Perlis ain't here tonight, why Shane's not on the phone with us. We think that they will still participate, maybe on an every other meeting or once a year type of thing. And obviously, I just talked to Perlis on Monday, and he's just a phone call away. So if there is a need for them to be involved, he asks for a couple weeks heads up before he presents something, of course. But he is not disengaged from the noise work here in Charlotte. They just can't commit to being And that leads to timeline. You know, these are great things that you're talking about, Stuart, but what's the timeline on this? April, we're going to do a celebration. So our next regular scheduled meeting is going to have no business. And I know we'll put together an agenda. He smiles at me. You know, he'll put together an agenda. I thought it, but we plan for that.
Post on that agenda.
We plan for the April meeting to be a celebration. Matt just got a proposal in from one location for us today. We're going to be working through the logistics of where we do it and what does that look like. One of the big things I want to do is I want to invite everyone that's been involved with the ACR back. Natalie, folks like Preston, I know, has had some challenges. Preston is may not be able to be involved with us in the future. Bobby just had to resign just for life demands. I'd love to have some of these folks that were involved in the ACR for months and years going back, come back to us at the celebration. And that really be kind of a capstone graduation ceremony, celebration, not graduation ceremony, but you know, a kind of end on this mission. And then in July, we would come forward with a draft mission and membership structure for y'all and others to comment and adopt. My goal is for us to have drafted something internally, got an internal buy-off on, and be able to get it to y'all soon after the April celebration. So that you have some time to spend with it as you have suggestions for improvements. We can work through that so that in July we can convene a new advocacy group, advisory body, name to be determined, but a new group that is convened in the July meeting. And I'm not only thinking that we keep on this quarterly schedule, but that's definitely something to that's on the table. Really, anything is on the table with this new thing, with this new better solution. There's no things that we can't even talk about. It's just that how we're structured right now doesn't work, and the mission of the ACR is convened at their house. And so we want y'all still to be involved, want your energy, your engagement, your technical expertise, and want to find a way to make it meaningful for y'all moving forward. So that is kind of the CLT update on ACR mission. I welcome your feedback, your gut reaction, your yelps of joy, your cries of anger.
I'll go ahead real quick, but I'll ask for anyone, please feel free to comment back. Stuart has assured me, and first thing I said, no, wasn't. Don't just push something on us. He said, yep, we'll listen to what you guys think. We'll listen to your input to everything. So certainly be free, and if I not come up just at this meeting, we'll have an opportunity to communicate electronically with Stuart and Matt and everybody going forward. This is a change, but I think it is probably a change that will better fit how we can, in my experience with working with City Council, City Council wasn't sure how well we were representing everybody out there anyway. So if we can get some of these very active people who want to be participating on board this group, I think we can step back into moving a little bit faster, having more people on our committees trying to drill down on some of this. Just wanted to make that statement before we jump in. Anybody want to comment? I don't know if we're ready to go.
I like everything Stuart's saying, and I agree. I've always thought that tying people to geographic or region, we were missing it. We weren't getting the representation and expertise that we kind of need. So now it sounds like we're going to be able to get people that we feel are really good and community people and you're not tied into having to pick somebody from the east side of Charlotte or having to pick somebody. There may not be people that are active in life, you know, but there, it is good to be able to get and open that up. Like I was going to ask tonight, we have members that want to get signed up, but we're kind of stuck. So if we don't have a Southeast, how do we get them in there? We don't have a way of doing that. So I like that. I think it's important to be able to keep the communication with the FAA, and I'm hoping there's a way that, not even being here, we can funnel our ideas to them without having to have them sit there. Yeah. So that's a good part, and I think it's a good idea. I like that idea. You know, 25 seems like a lot to me, but, you know.
We'll never have
when I think about a person that has been here over the years and the areas that have been represented, part of it is that it is a thing to see that there could be a change in what would happen. And so, well, participating isn't going to make any difference. So, they, person dropped off, and of course, persons have family issues and other things have not been able to participate. So, I think it's a good idea. My question also in terms of our local groups that we have meetings, does that mean that upcoming ones prior to April, there isn't going to be a need to continue seeing having those meetings until we find out about these structures?
I think that's a great question, Thelman, and Matt brought that up to me this morning, and my gut reaction was there's no reason to stop doing work that you're already passionate about. We're not trying to stop y'all from doing anything. We're just trying to rejigger, reform this body. And so if you got something in process, and I know multiple of the work groups do have stuff in process, I don't see any reason why you need to stop doing what you're doing. Kind of talk through some public meeting concerns. I don't think we're going to run into any of that type of stuff. And so, you know, if work groups want to keep going, great. We will figure out how to get that incorporated appropriately within the structure of the new body. But this is not a request at all to stop doing the good work that y'all been doing. It's just that we're going to be changing the structure.
I'm not even saying, but I'd encourage all the groups to keep meeting, and I already discussed a little bit. We planned on putting those groups through, at the very least, through April, so that we can have the opportunity also to see how best we can be with this group, and if we can get that information stored, if there's a thing we can do, for example, the community engagement side. One of the things we've identified is we need to create a clear avenue of communication directly with us, for example. But we can dig in all of that. I want those groups to still meet, honestly, just so we can find the things we can fix. Anyone else? So I guess the only other thing I'll point out, sorry. The only thing, as we were, when I first heard about it and everything, it was like, oh, this might be a little bit of a challenge for our group to adapt. But at the same time, after spending time thinking about it, it gives us the ability to be more flexible, honestly. Because if you recall early on, we had to create this, like, we had to get all the ideas together. We get to move a little bit more asymmetric, and we can work with the community groups around us a little bit more. Maybe we can, this is the good opportunity to keep connecting to those communities that are most impacted as well. And if that means some of them come sit on the board with, on whatever we call it, great. If it means we just need to go out and listen to some of those groups, I think we create something that can do that as well. think it's a step forward.
Before we go to the next agenda item, any other questions, comments about what Steward shared, any other observations?
I have a question. Did you say you have already have a list of people that are interested in joining the new group?
Yeah, we do. Sale. We have about 10 people that have already expressed interest in being involved, and just very frankly, their applications either did not fit into the body as convened, or they were so far, we were so far involved, so far down the path, that we couldn't spend the amount of time bringing a complete new up to speed this summer when y'all were voting on stuff that was so technical in nature. And so we kind of deferred some of those applications as well. But yeah, we have had over 10 expressions on that. Probably knows the exact number off the top of his head of interest that we've received already.
Well, I understand completely. I think that probably why the decision for somebody to do with it. It takes so much time to catch them up, to get them up to speed on these decisions. Now, that was a smart decision, but I'm glad to see there's 10 people that are in it.
And that's with doing just purely word of mouth on this. I think that how I envision us getting involved is much more robust than just word of mouth. You know, if you remember when we convened the ACR originally, 8+ years ago, we did a direct mail piece to everybody who had complained about airport noise. And then we did multiple other different follow-up methods to convene the body originally. And some of y'all got tapped by town mayors or council members or other folks, and some of y'all just, we kind of outreached it to you, or you kind of organically found your way in. That type of outreach intentionality, we've not done in years. And that's, we want to be very intentional in trying to bring together a reform body.
No, and I think, you know, instead of just getting away from districts, if you can find people that are interested that have come from a wide spectrum, you know, not just district, but their expertise, you know, for a wide spectrum, I think it would be awesome.
And
that gets
to the follow up question. So the technical group also goes into meeting as well.
Yeah, that technical working group that's working on the CDA OPD recommendation. Yeah, I kind of got the impression when y'all alluded to there was one recommendation that was still in the works that group could still continue.
Yes, we don't want any, let me be very direct on this. The slate of recommendations that y'all put forward, we want to see the FAA take action on those, either implement those changes or provide a firm response to them. And so what technical work group's been working on is, I see, as necessary and vital one. If it doesn't happen over these next couple months, that's reality, but that would be one of the first things that I want us to keep pushing the pressure on FAA. Because very frankly, FAA is good at following their timelines, but when the community puts pressure on them, they will respond to that pressure. And so we need to keep that pressure on.
And to tell you the truth, I've been disappointed in the responses so far, except for the slate. They did answer to the slate question. But as far as MSF was brought up in R150, I think they just ignored it.
Any other comments before we go to the next item? Agenda item 3B is doing somewhat of a debrief from the ACR's perspective on the Part 150. If you'll note, there's no project team update that we typically have on the agenda. We'll kind of weave that into this part of the agenda, since I know you all in the community and government engagement project teams and the local office teams over the 2 months prior to this meeting spent some time on the Part 150. So I'm actually going to hand it off to Bill to kick off this process of discussing the Part 150 process from the ACR's perspective.
Excellent. So, if anyone didn't watch the show that Monday, there was plenty of company along with us to come and speak to city council, both for and against, although the pilots there, that crazy draw it, they look really sharp, I gotta say, in the crowd, if that's word. And the community members, I will say at least a number of them are people we've seen here in front of us, at least a couple. And I know a lot of them have talked to Dan on the map. Sorry, flashback. I thought that for 2 years I wouldn't do that. I apologize for that. So I think it's important to note that we were touching many of the parts of the community that are most concerned about this. All of the media uproar about there are now 27 different flight tracks was a major reaction, it seemed, to things that we had talked about and had some developed some level of understanding for what it meant. Whereas when you just throw that out, it sounds confusing to the general public, I think. This is one of the things I think we can help with going down the road, not just carrying the CLT water, but more importantly, making sure somebody there provides that diagnosis, that analysis of that from a community perspective. Because what's going forward might not be exactly what we recommended, but if we can get the analysis done, if we can partner up with Eugene again and do the analysis, the format that we had done in the past, I think we could make a more informed decision on whether or not we thought it would really impact broader airport laws. But, so that was the big statement about part of what it felt like going through Department 50. So some of the things we did leading up to and until the city council vote, I first want to say thank you to the government engagement team and the community engagement team. Even if you didn't get a chance to have a direct conversation with somebody about this, have the dialogues that we had in those meetings were very helpful. The documents we created were every city council member saw, and the just workshopping the material and everything helped me, I know personally, have the conversation that I had with council members to better represent our entire body. And I know city council member I spoke to reviewed our general support for the Part 150. That is a blanket. We loved everything about it. I'm confident in that. So, thank you. But we sent our documentation and messages to all of the city council members and specifically targeting the transportation planning development committee members and the chair Ed Griggs. We communicated directly with council member Griggs throughout the process. I was on the phone with him 4 times, I think, all told. Ed's a great guy. I've gotten to him from back where I've worked with him on planning commission, but he definitely heard our caution that we were suggesting moving into this. Our communication specifically highlighted our informed nature of our feedback, and while we pointed out shortcomings in the process, specifically that we need to do more to mitigate the impact of airport noise from a community perspective. And going forward, let's look to work more with community groups, perhaps, to better understand concerns and inform the process. I just realized I jumped ahead to my key takeaways, Ed. Thank you for I guess the other thing on the key takeaway side is we really only had one media contact that got through to us, and that was actually an in-person bump into. I know Matt was forwarding our contact information to them if they got a hold of you. At least they told us you were going to be responding to them. That's one thing for any new group that we kind of work out. How can we get that contact information? Things move fast around the city council meeting. Not all of our efforts are going to need to be time constrained like that. So I think it would have worked if it was something that had a little more lead time for the people writing, but it blew up when after that committee, city council committee meeting where everybody had a whole discussion about how they were supposed to be doing their jobs to each other. But that doesn't involve us. Just got the media's attention, and they didn't call it. But I do want to hear what everybody else thought as far as the process, and I know we all saw shortcomings in the way Department 50 works. At the same time, if there are things we can learn as we continue to move forward, like we know we've got to keep on the FAA, that was something we knew before, but is there more things we need to be thinking about? And all of this can help inform what group we end up with in 6 months. So, anyone have any thoughts on takeaways about this particular process? Not just outreach to the city council and everything, any part of it. One other thing I wanted to point out. Jacob did a great job of writing up some of his specific concerns. I also shared those specifically to city council members and pointed out, while it wasn't the entire ACR recommendation, it was an example of we are not one monolithic group. What we approved was a compromise for all of us, probably, on some level. And that we had very knowledgeable people working toward solutions that we think are viable. And let's not give up on that. The one thing I heard back from multiple city council members is, keep doing that. So, I was a little worried. City council was going to say, after you're done with this, go away. Stay away from us. I think there's an opportunity for us to continue to develop for lines of communication both for city council, but also through Stewart's office on how we can potentially continue to communicate with city council. Because while they have oversight, and they certainly get phone calls of unhappy elected, unhappy constituents, right now they want to hear about this and understand it. And we should take that opportunity. Anyone else have any takeaways, thoughts about the whole process, or as we stand right now, what we should learn as we move forward? Thank you.
I'm not sure I fully understand the way that the terms of use. Like, I'm just listening to the discussion, I get a sense of frustration. Maybe misinterpreting. Why would the committee feel that, well, do they think that we're creating a problem, or is it not a job, or we're not addressing voice, and they're hearing the constituents? I don't understand. So this thing, it just sounds like there's a
Did you watch that committee meeting, the transportation?
No, I don't have access to it.
It's online.
I wouldn't know where it was.
That's all right. It evolved a little bit into interpersonal discussions that were only tangentially connected to airport noise. The people who had any significant communication with the ACR understood the concerns, and I think their biggest contribution to the debate was we need to reach more community members, and I think we can help them do that. And don't get me wrong, the media started paying attention to this, the council member forgot that.
Yeah, when they're yelling each other about it.
If I may, Phil, there is some bad blood between a couple of council members on a personal level.
Yeah.
They don't like each other. And they don't like how that other council member is doing their council job. And so they are using the platform that they have to bash their fellow council. And so any opportunity that one person in particular has to slam another council member, they're going to use it. And this just became another tool for them to utilize. And I don't,
we did a dinner briefing on December the 2nd, and literally I was between two council members all the way back, and I was watching it like to watch a tennis match. It was just that volley back and forth, and it was all, they were all talking about ACR, talking about Part 150, talking about NOLS, but it was all the axes. They were grinding their axes that they had against each other.
Was it factual stuff, or was it just their opinion stuff?
In my opinion, those two members do not like each other. And if one of them said the sky is blue today, the other one would say it's not. Up, down, stop, go. And so those members are who vote generally in the same way, which is so funny to me. You watch them, their votes are almost identical, but they do not like each other as people. And so they're going to bicker any opportunity that they're given. And so the facts are not at all why they're bickering. They use those facts to bicker with each other.
And so a lot of good debate wasn't had. Council then generally, at that point, their concern was, did they reach enough of the public? And I think all of us think, well, they certainly could have reached more public. I think there are plenty of people who would have wanted to say something. And then when we finally got the media, we sent many things out through the media trying to access the public. And in our community engagement team, that Sam does a great job of finding any neighborhood group in his part of the world that he can get in front of. And we have repeatedly tried to work on different ways to get our message out correctly to our community groups and whatnot.
So the complaint was that the ACR was not doing.
No, it wasn't even
getting out to the public.
It was.
And hearing the public's concerns, not that the airport was, but that the ACR.
No. It was that us, both of us, all of us. Everyone involved in the Part 150 wasn't doing the job they asked about.
Okay.
And again, this is not the debate I think that we're here to fix. It was unfortunate, and it ended up driving a lot of attention. The conversations I had with city council members were much more meaningful than watching this debate, because while he was watching the tennis match, I was watching Stewart's head go from one to the other as well on camera.
If you can send me the link in maybe a minute, so I'll
wait 2 to 3 hours.
If you've got an hour, you more minutes of it.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
So I didn't watch the meeting that Alita and Bill described, the different varying paths. That was on the news media, big time. And so there was a lot of discussion in Ed. And whenever I saw it, it felt like the ACR really was not a part of the communication process, that there wasn't anyone that had been working on all of the proposals and found. So I think from that perspective, and this is what we talked about in the local option community, the government engagement, that we're still not effectively communicating our presence. And I know when I started back many years ago in the neighborhood, you know, they don't use mail anymore, but we did mail notices and we met at the police station on Wilmington Boulevard and other kinds of things. And although we had meetings, and these are things that I've expressed before, if you don't know what questions to ask when we go to the Part 150 meetings and the presentations, and they were standing around and they were available for questions. But if you don't know what to ask, then how do you know really what information? So in past meetings, there has been a brief presentation that has been made. And so rolling presentations, this is what it is. I mean, we can go around and look at the great pictures, but if you don't know what you're looking at as a community member, then you really don't understand. And so while the ACR members were present, no one knew that, I mean, the community wasn't there as much as they had been in the past, even though we're affected by noise. And the way things have changed in the last 10 years. So I think we do need to somehow make our presence more known in what the suggestions, which I think probably is in the minute. Our meeting minute was for us to have some kind of generic business card. So when we are out in public, we are able to say we are the ACR. This is the lake. We get information. We are engaging with people who have already complained. I don't want anyone calling me personally. Someone did call me and I referred to Ed and Ed, you know, the person on the south side, south north, who's the representative. So I personally, I think my information probably needed online, but I think that we need to have something generic so that we are at the city council meeting. We just passed these cards out to the individuals that were there, the community members that were there, the community members who attended our meeting. So there's an exchange, so we have an opportunity to make our presence more known. And that there is someone that has been working for 8 years around Charlotte Boys, and our latest process, our engagement has been a part of it, which, you know, what it is, what it is. When I was in the library, and I saw the South State document. Who can understand and who's going to read this huge binder of information? It's overwhelming, overwhelming. So I can see how anyone would get into the life that it's all. Who's going to read something like that?
Thank you, Thelma. And I know that Tracy's had her hand up. Tracy, did you want to make a comment or share something?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to Stuart's comments about the dynamic at the meeting and to offer this additional perspective that there is a lot of, I don't know if PTSD is the word, but the impact of last year's UDO and comprehensive plan has left the city council really wondering whether the public engagement process appropriately conveys impact or proposed impacts, and that was what was really brought up during this Carbon 15 consideration, which is the public is not going to be interested until they experience or sense an impact to a proposed policy, and that is really hard to demonstrate when you're just advancing a policy proposal. You're not actually able to demonstrate, you know, the noise impact, the exact flight path, any specific kind of map. And having met, you know, with Councilmember Johnson in person about some of her concerns, everything she was stating about her concern about Part 150 had more to do with the experience she had in her district following the UDO, which is that she believed that the UDO process was a vote that she had to make without fully understanding the impact and that the community didn't understand the impact of that policy proposal. So I guess I would just say that a lot of the content that was being discussed in that meeting has ties to past votes and experiences the council is going through right now as a policy is being rolled out and the community is experiencing the impact of those policies, as will, you know, the same thing, when the Part 150 recommendations are implemented, the community will respond differently. But we cannot at this point tell the community what those impacts will be because they still have to be studied, they still have to be analyzed, there's much more work to be done, and then you will only react to changes in airspace when you actually hear the noise. And so that was just, I want to offer that additional context, but Thelma, I think your points are well taken as well, and so it was a very interesting council meeting, but it is very much a reflection of now a multi-year effort around some other issues, not so much just the ACR's role in public engagement or the Part 150 specifically, but more a general concern about how the public chooses to engage and information sharing when they cannot fully experience or appreciate the potential impacts or implications of those policy decisions.
Thank you, Tracy. I'm going to go to Stuart and then Jacob.
Just real quick, Thelma, thank you for calling us out on the card thing. I remember us talking about that year ago probably, and I apologize that we never did anything on that. I have a quick fix that hit me as you were talking about it. Kevin's going to investigate it right now. We have business cards for the noise office that have 704-359-AGA on phone number. I think the reverse of those cards is blank. And so right there, I think that put your name, and if you want to put your contact information on there, great. If not, you'll direct them to Matt, who has all your contact information right there. And so Kevin's investigating that right now. Thank you for that call out, Thelma. That's keeping us honest. Appreciate that.
Actually, just to piggyback off of that, I don't know if you were aware of this or not, but as of, I think, 3 weeks ago,
oh, wait, later. We'll talk about that later. I'll talk about that.
Okay, I got that. Spoilers.
Exactly.
Jacob. Yeah, I was just wondering, I mean, if the council understand the Department 50 process, first of all, turns on this 65 D&L boundary, and just reacting to Tracy's comments, if people are thinking that once these things are implemented, that there's going to be a lot of public, like, favorable reaction, I think the answer is going to be no, because all of these things have to do with the 65 D&L. We proposed lots of things that I think would have brought relief outside the 65 D&L would have actually brought positive reaction, but most of those, or all of those things were rejected. pretty much everything I was selected was selected primarily for operational reasons, not for noise reduction. And so I would not anticipate that the public will be happy once all of these measures are implemented. I don't think there's a capable reaction. And I wouldn't be surprised if many of the things that had positives within the 65 D&L effect will have much larger outside the 65 D&L adverse effect, which will be worse. So, I mean, I don't know. It wasn't analyzed. It was just three houses inside the 65 D&L were favored. We're going to move all the operations late night from here to here. How many tens of thousands of residents outside the 65 D&L now are going to have planes over their house? So I don't have any particular optimism that people are going to react favorably to this. I hope the council understands that this process is small. From that perspective, they expect a positive noise effect.
And I think, Jacob, you bring up something that needs to be acknowledged. The Part 150 is a prescribed process. We followed that process. Is that process good for our community? I think that everyone involved on the project team, and I think I can speak for y'all, and saying that we don't think the process is as robust as it needs to be. But it's a prescribed process. There is steps. I talked about how when the FAA pulled us to stand up the ACR and they didn't give us the script. There is a very precise script that you follow with a Part 150. There's some latitude in it for interpretation. And yes, it's an opportunity that can go above and bigger. And we did do some things that were bigger than the prescribed process. But it is a prescribed process. And I don't think that council asked or cared whether we were doing a prescribed process. What I heard in the feedback was that they wanted something more robust. And that was part of what led me personally to want us to have a better solution around this. And so, you bring up a good point that Part 150 is a flawed process. I want us to do something better in the future. The cards, the noise cards, we've got a couple of them. They're not as flexible as I thought they were. We've got a solution that we'll work on. Thank you for calling us out on that, Thelma. We'll get this, we'll get y'all something as soon as possible.
Anyone else?
Sam and Sherry and Diane, just want to give y'all an opportunity as well. Anything top to mind either about the process for the Part 150 or any key takeaways? Okay.
My problem with Part 150 was that it was just within the 65. If you look around the room, no one lives in that area. it affects very few people. And I think that's been my frustration every time I've left, is that this isn't going to help me. You know, so when are we going to move to work on something that's helping the people that are really being affected? And I think that might need to be our goal in whatever this group looks like. But I don't know where that goes with the city.
You're absolutely correct. And I will say some of the things that were in this slate that haven't been implemented yet are theoretically things that will, and by our analysis, will definitely reduce noise impacts for a majority of people impacted. The city is almost never going to be involved in any of that. And so that's part of the trick, that all of the Parkland 50 stuff really is a very confined space. We tried to fit a few things in, quite a few things in, that were outside of that 65 mile, and to take a point, almost all of them were completely projected. For reasons we want to find out stuff, and I think all of us in the room, we still think we are owed either a chance to do analysis on what is being proposed, or a reason why some of our great ideas weren't great ideas. And those are things this new group, I think, needs to keep doing. Work's not done, even though our mission from the FAA's perspective has been completed. So we need the group to go on. We need a group to go on to be able to do this, to be able to provide community light analysis. No one else is going to do that except groups like ours. But,
yeah, just one other thing I'll just say is, no matter how we formally form the group, there needs to be more engagement from the other end in terms of considering possibilities on how to modify operations and improve things. I mean, yes, and Stuart, to your point earlier, the problem 50 is but there is actually a lot of discretion embedded in it. There's a lot of times where, I mean, we had proposals that were positive and it was clear, we watched the process, that operational concerns always were prioritized over the whole list.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, there cannot be improvement until there is some good faith engagement in the form of recognizing that trade-offs are appropriate, that there are times where the guys in the tower might have to hire another guy and have another shift on, which they need to just shift the way they feel they can. It can't just be, this is harder for me to do my job, so no. Like sometimes they need to make a change or change something to improve things for the community. Because there are, I think, opportunities to make things better, but if it involves moving things around and not just doing it the preferred way all the time. There needs to be a willingness to make trades that may involve some efficiency trades to improve people. And I don't think that exists yet, and thought that this is going to be very hard to make.
I think Gene remotely has a comment. Gene, do you have something you wanted to share or a question to ask?
Yeah, just a comment and a kind of a viewpoint. HMH does a lot of Part 150, so we understand their intent, their scope, and they are limited. And I think the ACR knew that going in, or at least some of the members did, most probably did. And as we put together our slate, the only reason we focused on the 150 is that the FAA wanted to analyze the proposed departure procedures as part of the 150, because they were undertaking a new 150. That was the only reason that we then kind of shift focus to the 150. Now that process is over. The implementation of that process hasn't been completed, but we now know the results of what moved forward with the 150, And so now it's back to the ACR to determine where they go from here, knowing that the 150 wasn't the really the end all for, you know, your concerns. It was one avenue that the FAA decided they wanted to go down. And again, it was for those three recommended departure procedures. So, I want to also convey my, experience is that more of what this group wants to do has occurred outside of the Part 150 process as opposed to inside the Part 150 process. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And let you know that from my experience that has been the case. So I don't think people should be disappointed in the process because it is what it is. It did run its course. It did what it was supposed to do. But again, really for this group to get what they want, most of these changes would and typically does occur outside of the Part 150 process because remember Part 150 is about land use compatibility. And what we're discussing here are noise effects in addition or outside of that area in which land use compatibility is considered.
Thanks, Gene. Before we go to the next agenda item, I'm actually going to just briefly walk through the quarterly newsletter before going to the CLT operations update. Anything else that y'all want to share or convey at this point on this agenda item? For those of y'all following along on maybe your own copy of the documentation in front of you, pages 6 through 8 in the handout or the cover email for the quarterly newsletter, just sharing this as a reminder for everybody, just table of contents at the top shows the type of information that's in the newsletter. So please make sure you're reviewing these. We have the Part 150 updates. This email was sent, I believe, 2 days after the December 9th City Council meeting. We have project team updates on there. We do have the scheduled project team meetings. I will go ahead in the next week or two send out calendar invites for the next 2 months of project team meetings so you all, to Phil's point, can have a conversation about what this group, these groups are working on and where you want to continue the focus and maybe adjust it moving forward. And obviously after the April meeting when CLT will end up after that meeting, you know, sharing a draft of the mission statement, there will be you know, some additional discussion about the roles of these project teams and the focus moving forward. We have the CLT operational measures, the most recent ones listed here. Matt's going to go over some of those in detail. We have updates from the most recent request motions document, which I'll cover on the very last page of the handout, and then the draft agenda for the meeting. So just wanted to let y'all know that, and there's always an updated calendar of ACR-related meetings that's on the website. So just a reminder, when you get the newsletter, feel free to peruse it pretty quickly. It'll give you an update between these quarterly meetings. Next item on the agenda is the CLT operational updates. So I'm going to go to CLT to go ahead and start walking us through, starting on page 9 of the handout.
I'm going to preface it before we get into the actual handout with some numbers that are hot off the presses. This probably went out in a press release today. I assume we press released it today, Chris, our numbers for the holiday week.
We sent them to a reporter who asked.
Okay, cool. Travel started picking up on Friday, 12/20, and it ran through 1/5. So almost 3 weeks of a peak this year. We had about a 6.3% increase this year on PAX over last year. Flights were up about 8% this holiday season over last year. And the first time that in my knowledge ever, we had over 800 departures on Monday, 12/30. We had over 800 departures. That was compared to 2023's highest, which was 784. So we are at all-time highs, breaking records on busyness. We really saw that with American, you know, obviously in our predominant carrier here. Their enplanements were up about 1.5% over 2023. Their PAX were up about 3.6 passengers. Passenger numbers were up about 3.6%. over their 2023 numbers. Their Christmas Day numbers were down
by about 20%. So that overall growth means it's concentrated on weekdays, is not spread evenly. And that's one of the dynamics with Christmas and New Year's travel, as opposed to Thanksgiving travel. Thanksgiving travel is always concentrated on that Wednesday and Sunday. Generally with Christmas, it gets spread out pretty evenly with, you know, some bump up days. This day we had a noticeable decrease day with passengers, going down on that. Throughput, DSA throughput.
Sure. Can I just make a
quick
point on Christmas Day?
Yeah.
Since there was quite a bit of press around a tech outage that the airline faced on Christmas Eve. I do want to acknowledge that our Sabre system did go down on Christmas Eve morning, and it took out the kiosks, our bag checking, our weight balance systems. But in Charlotte, we were fully recovered by that afternoon. We did not have one cancellation in Charlotte due to the tech outage. We did have cascading delays throughout the day, but we were able to, through proactive delay programs, we were able to connect our customers through Charlotte and recover very well in terms of completion factor. So I didn't want that to be a question about load factors on Christmas Day, because we were able to satisfy the demand of our customers on Christmas Eve. Thanks.
Thanks, Tracy. Appreciate that clarification. That leads into my final point, which was local traffic. Local traffic was crazy. We screened on Friday the 27th over 39,000 people on that day. Our total throughput for the holiday season was up 11.5% local over 2023. Baggage numbers were up about 11%. So that means that people are checking bags also. So that generally leads you to think of longer trips, more robust types of trips. But TSA security screen times were very reasonable, with the average security wait time for the holiday weeks for 70% of the time was less than 10 minutes. So I commend the team as a whole. While we are seeing extraordinary growth and dealing with issues that I don't think anyone thought we would deal with, like the Sabre system crashing, overall the travel experience continues on about the same course as it was before.
Stuart, can I add one more thing?
Please, Chris.
Yesterday, the National Weather Service confirmed a tornado on Summer Plan just west of the airport, starting just beyond West Boulevard and traveled south about a mile, 65 mile an hour winds, broke up about Walters Ferry. So we don't think that holiday travel with tornadoes, but the National Weather Service confirmed a tornado just missed the airport on Summer Plan.
They confirmed that yesterday. He had zero. One other operational update before I turn it over to Matt's talk. Did want to let y'all know that there has been some landside changes, and are more landside changes in the process. The big one for Thelma and her neighbors to the north is Old Dow Road has been realigned, and so it now intersects in Wilkinson and Tuckasegee. Remember where we put that Amazon facility and the QT is under construction right now? There's a fourth leg of that interchange open now. And that is Old Dow Road, and that goes up to the overlook. It's a quick way to get to the overlook, and reroutes Old Dow Road. On the south side of the airfield, there's a section of West Boulevard that is being realigned. The detour route kind of takes you down Yorkmont for a second, and then down Byram, where Animal Care and Control is located. There's going to be some roads rebuilt in that area, but it's in our vernacular, we call the West Boulevard relocation, and that does impact folks that are trying to get from, say, the Center City or the West Boulevard neighborhoods over to Bearwick or Steel Creek. There's a bit of a detour through that area. So, did want to make sure that y'all are aware of that operational impact on the land side. Matt, you want to talk about the numbers and then the news that I
We on?
So yeah, not to the county board stuff. I'll just skim over this, and if you look online, by the way, the annual report for 2024 will be populating here hopefully soon. Our webmaster has them, and they're going to be showing up, but there wasn't time to get into the package. So I'm going to kind of just skim over this real quick. The airport flow report through October, we actually saw a reduction. We started off roughly 83% north and 17% south. Thankfully, in November, that subsided a little bit, like 75% north, 25% south. And then in December, it slowed down a little bit more, 71% north, and 29% south. So we have seen a little bit of an ease through October, November, December in terms of the south versus north flow. And like I said, if you look online, you can see the annual totals, 2024. The complaints?
Sorry, you don't have the annual.
Off the top of my head, I remember the exact numbers. I think it's 61 point something and 38 point something. So it turned out to be roughly 61 and 39, so 61% or 39% south. Don't remember the exact point numbers, but that's roughly where it turned out. The complaints, interestingly enough, we started off in October with 34 households and 1,707 complaints. That went up a little bit in November during the holiday season, 38 households and 2,410 complaints. And here's where it gets a little bit interesting. In December, the households went down, but the complaints went up, and I know you're probably going to ask me why. The households came down to 29, the complaints went up to 2,953. I can tell you this is because of one sole complaint. She has decided that the airplanes departing to the north in the northeast quadrant of Charlotte, that she doesn't want them flying over her house. Even though she partook in the parliamentary process and all her public commentary, that she's going to escalate her complaints. I think during December, she did something like 900 and some more complaints by herself. So that's the reason why the household went down and then she went to the north because of that one individual. So, on some good news. You've been waiting for this one. This is the 3A. These are the 3A results. And I'm actually happy to finally be able to give it to you. When we did this, we compared January, February, and March. The reason why we did that was because, as you all know, the increase in altitudes didn't kick in until after that. So basically, January and February, March of 2023 was our baseline. And then I just recently followed it up with September, October, November, and I wanted to make sure that all my numbers in there correct. One thing I do want to mention is that, you know, there is a margin of error because of the fact that from January, February, March through October, September, October, November, there were a different amount of days going north versus days going south. And obviously, certain weather conditions may have prevailed, which caused different types of procedures to be used, whether it's a VFR or an IFR procedure, visual or instrument procedures. That can sometimes skew the results a little bit. But it's all encouraging, it's all good news. We've seen increases in terms of the north flow. On the two outer waypoints, they've gone up a bit at CDOTS and CAT, and that's pretty much where the aircraft assembly went out. And they're officially in Class B airspace, which is what we are. This airport is Class Bravo airport. So those two waypoints are gone, but that's not basically where our citizens tend to notice things. They tend to notice things on the downwinds, and here's where the difference is. On the north flow west downwind, we saw an increase of 291 feet on the average, which is good news, bringing us up to 2,075 NSL. And on the east side, we saw a 396 foot increase, 5,617. Again, good news. As a matter of fact, some of my complainants that are down there in that southeast quadrant from the north flow actually started complaining less. So I'm imagining it must have had some positive impact because a couple of complainants just kind of slowed down. On the south flow, similar story. The two entry waypoints, air and leaks, we saw increases in those as well, which basically means that the downwinds will also positively affect. We wound up with an increase on the west side, 367 feet.
and he and I downwinds are now 5,119. And on the east side, similar story, went up 375 feet with 5,656. So all of this means that the measure that you put forward, that the FAA approved and implemented, is now having the effect that you intended, and we're seeing nice green positive numbers showing us that those altitudes have gone up. So congratulations on that, and I want to do the first one to congratulate you on that. Last thing I want to mention is that we are now having our phone line. Stu was mentioning the 704-359 here, 437. That phone line is now live. And what I mean by that is that when it rings, I get the call. I'm actually picking up the phone. Rather than somebody getting a voicemail or please leave a message or a voice here, I'm actually answering the phone. Folks that I've been talking to, like, as always, appreciate getting a human being. None of us likes getting a voicemail or leaving a message, so it's good that I'm answering the phone. The phone is live Monday through Friday at 8:05 because I have to sleep sometime. And basically, you know, so far, a good positive reaction. As Thelma will tell you, I always make myself available to anyone and everyone that wants to sit down and be educated on the stuff, and I personally answer and respond to all the questions. If anybody has any questions, go ahead and shoot, and that's pretty much it. Report 704-359 here, which I believe is 4327.
And that's a great review, and you answered it.
Yeah, correct.
Between 85 and 100.
Absolutely. And I will take, Kevin and Stuart will tell you, I will take as much time as is necessary, even though people don't want to stay on the phone. I'll take as long as is necessary until they understand what's going on, because, you know, it's one thing to be upset, but it's more important that they understand why. I'm always available if somebody needs.
Will you listen to my complaint?
Yeah. Anytime. I got all the time in the world. Yeah.
5 o'clock?
No, 5 o'clock, the phone basically reverts back to its normal process, which is to take the phone recording and populate the information on plane noise. And at that point, I'll follow up, you know, following morning when I see it. As a matter of fact, on occasion, I've been known to follow up on Saturday or Sunday when, you know, I have somebody send me an email, I'll say, you know, fine, I'll answer. So on certain occasions, even on weekends, I'll answer. Any other questions? Jim?
Just an observation. I mean, I think it's good that the planes are going up higher on these as a result of these altitudes, although the numbers are such, and I remember having this conversation from past, and I don't think it's level up that's the level. I'm not saying it's not having effect, but I don't think it's from being raising the altitude. It's not the distance. It's because I think it's because planes are now producing that problem. I think I'm becoming more and more convinced that the noise mitigation is best addressed figuring out how to get pilots to reduce their throttle when they're lower than the ground. Including, for example, having them do their base leg at a higher altitude further out. I think they're noisiest on that base leg. So if you can figure out how to push them away from here and a little higher up, that'll have an impact. I think that the reason why they might see cougar points are descending at a higher gradient. So they're not, they have their dolls back. That's what it is.
I don't think we're done analyzing that, right? They're going to continue to track data, and I also wouldn't be surprised if I understand our conversations with some of the tower and whatnot. It's possible some of these might continue to drift higher.
Yeah,
our procedures get more ingrained and pilots get more familiar, etc.
Yeah, it's easy enough. It's basically, we have what we refer to them as gates. A gate is basically a window in which when an airplane passes through it, it records the data. It's a virtual window in space. I have the gates already set up. It's pretty easy to run them again in January, February, March of 2025. And, you know, we'll have a better idea, you know, for the same, getting better, of course. But from what I'm seeing right here, it seems like they're keeping their word and they did a nice job with it so far.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm happy to see this. I know they're all looking forward to that tangible thing that the very least that we can say, look, start to finish, this was us, this was this group, guys. That's still a victory.
Yes. Matt, did you want to do anything with White Cracker this evening, or?
If you're interested, we can take a minute and just go with the new Flight Tracker to the RSV.
So what Matt's going to be showing is we switched vendors for the software, and it's the same raw information, same data of the interface, the front end that y'all use is changed. I want to make sure that y'all are familiar with what this interface looks like.
I asked them to go ahead and I know a lot of us have already spent some time fiddling with it, take a look at it, playing around. For anyone who has it, I want to make sure that this feels accessible to you. If you're feeling like it's time to do another round of complaining, or you got to explain to somebody what's going on, this is very helpful to say visually depict the aircraft that are flying around our space, and they'll show you, but you can learn more about where it's going, what it's doing. It should help any of our community members that are feeling at wit's end and not understanding what's happening. At least, if it's not saying it helps with noise at all yet, but you'll be able to understand what's going on.
Okay. Yeah, the only thing I was going to add is he's going to show you a little bit, but if you want a more in depth one-on-one, Matt is happy to do that. So please call him and he's glad to walk through it.
So obviously the first thing I want to call your attention to is the message box. Obviously, I'm able to post customized messages. I have to keep it civil, of course, but you can see here that the message that I posted about a week ago is about this meeting. So that way folks that were jumping on the Flight Tracker will be able to see that the meeting was scheduled for tonight, location, and of course available due to Microsoft Teams. And that's something that'll actually go off at 8 o'clock, so I can set those up for certain days and times. And that thing's about to click off in about 27 minutes, but I want you guys to see it. So it was been there for the last week. Starting from the left side, we have a quick start guide. And I would say, you know what, take a little time and read through it, because it kind of gives you the nuts and bolts of how the program works. It'll give you the aircraft window, I don't know why it's not working on this computer, but normally when you click these, it'll give you an instructional panel. So basically, you can see how the aircraft are laid out. I'll try refreshing it just for you. Doesn't like something about this browser. It could be because I'm not on my native browser. But the quick start guide is actually pretty valuable. You can jump on here and you can read up about how the controls work, what the aircraft symbols mean, the aircraft symbology means, the map itself, the controls, the noise doesn't apply to us because they're referring to noise monitors, and how things are tagged and which panels are available. Sometimes the program will get stuck once in a while, and you have to reset it in order to get the lights to pop up. They went just down. Get there. Okay. So the quick start guide is something I just basically suggest that you take a peek at, because it gives you kind of nuts and bolts of the program. But in the top blue bar here, you'll see there's a start here bar, and there's also investigate. Investigate gives you an opportunity to look up a flight and be able to plug in an address and figure out what that flight was and how close it was to you. And it gives you instructions through here to locate your position on the map, choose your time period, and then select the flight to report a complaint. And then you can actually submit the complaint right here. So it goes through the criteria to be able to do your own miniature investigation about how to figure out what airplane just lost your house and rattled your china in the cabin. And that basically is a nice thing because it lets you follow up with a complaint. The thing that we like the most about this program is the ability to be able to go back historically in time. So you see in this mode on the bottom left, it says show current flights. You can also go historical, and historical means you can plug in a specific date and time, and that will allow you to go back and say, what happened last night at 6 o'clock, and you can actually dial it back. And you'll notice on the bottom here, it's indicating what time it's tracking. So it says 7:28 and 23 seconds. So once you load that historical data and you click set, you can go back to find the aircraft that particularly bothered you. So something that woke you up at 1 o'clock in the morning, but you didn't feel like getting out of bed to research it, now you can go back and figure out what it was that actually did that. On your Monomet map screen, you have the ability, obviously, to zoom down, zoom out. You can basically plug in your address. This is where you start your investigation. You plug in your address, you click find, it will locate you on the map, and then you'll be able to narrow down which aircraft might have been the offending airplane. Cool thing about this is that you can pick an airplane, and obviously if you look at this right now, you can see that we're in an arrival phase. So all of the red aircraft are arrivals. Everything as they go down the downwind, and they basically turn around, they come back to the base in the final, and they come back to land. If you take particular aircraft, so let's grab this American Airlines flight, Tracy, and we can actually show the static track on it. It'll show us how the aircraft arrived. That aircraft came from the northeast. It entered the downwind just south of the airport, and then it continued its track through its base, through its final, and you can actually see how that aircraft entered the airspace and how it approached the airport. The nice thing also here is you can put in different layers. You can use the road layer, the streets, or you can use the aerial layer, which will give you the satellite map. One other neat feature about this is this little sprocket wheel down here. Little sprocket wheel down here can give you the opportunity to smooth the aircraft movement. If you look at it right now, you'll see that as it updates, there are little small jerky motions there. If you happen to be more of like the OCD type and you want, you know, more a little bit smoother, if you click on that, it'll basically get rid of that little jerky motion and now it'll be smooth. It depends on if you like that kind of thing. Aircraft information text, as you click that, you just became an air traffic controller. Because now you can see the flight, where the aircraft came from, where it's going to, the type of the aircraft, and the altitude. So these are kind of little neat features that you can play with. Like I said, we like this program. It's kind of cool. We also have a weather panel that will give you the basic weather. So on days when we are what we call IFR, or instrument flight conditions, that changes the game a little bit because at the end of the day, they're going to be using nothing but instrument flight procedures, and there's going to be a more strict regimen to how the aircraft are approaching and the landing. So if you're ever curious about what's going on out there, you can see the observation time, temperature, pressure, relative humidity, dew point, and visibility. So if that visibility drops below 3 miles, or if you see that temperature and the dew point are almost even, that means we have fog. So if you see like 33 degrees and 33 degrees on the dew point, chances are we're going to have fog. And if there's fog and visibility drops 3 or 2 miles, now we're in instrument flight conditions, and that's going to change things a little bit. And one or two little more little things real fast. If there is a layer selector and a rainfall layer. Now, layer selector is cool because if you zoom down here, this is the airport's current layout. If you notice, there's a little box here that says new runway 0119. Click on that, there's the fourth runway. So if you want to see where the south end around taxiway is going to be, you can actually see it jutting out here down south of West Boulevard, right north of Byron, and that gives you an idea of the reason why roads are being closed as that's being built. So that layer is kind of cool. And then last but not least, you've got counties, and you know, you can plug it in and separate the counties out and color coding. So there's a bunch of neat features on here. It's kind of a cool program. We like it. And if anybody wants to spend a little time with me getting a little more familiar with it or discussing, you know, what's going on with any of these flight paths, I'm always happy to help. And yeah, it's been fun. I enjoyed doing this little quick presentation for you guys. If there's any questions, shoot. Yeah.
It's a separate app from the CLT app.
Yeah, it's not in an app form. It's a web-based flight tracker.
Oh.
So basically, it can be accessed. The easiest way to access it is the Charlotte Airport website. If you scroll down to the noise tab, at the very bottom of the noise tab, you will see flight tracker, and that's where it lives.
Okay.
Open a browser. Charlotte Airport website, right? Yeah, if you go to the Charlotte Airport website, I can show you real quick.
CLTAirport.com.
Yeah.
What is CLTAirport.com?
CLTAirport.com.
If you just search Charlotte Airport.
Yeah. If you go to the website, at the very bottom, see down here at the very bottom where it says noise? If you click on noise, Part 150, File a Complaint, Noise Reports, which is where you find the annual reports. The ACR, which is obviously you guys, and then Flight Tracker. And right there on Flight Tracker, Flight Tracker Public World, that's how you get access to it. So, questions?
Matt, you just went over, you changed the screen, but I think it looks like there is a departure from some green.
Yeah.
Cheating ones that we talked about last year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like there's one that's cheating. Right now. Let's see, where is that agreement? No, not that one.
No, that wait, one's fair. At least it's not American. Yeah, at the end of the day, yeah, you can go back like this.
That was
this right. Air travel?
Yeah,
that okay, that's American. Yeah. No, that aircraft did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah,
and basically once you get used to this and you get a chance to play with it a little bit, it kind of becomes pretty easy to use. And you know, if you ever have any data that you want to verify with me or you want to look at a group of flight tracks, kind of like what I showed you in Numa, you can always get with me and I can search day, time, window and show you what the flight tracks are. Any other questions?
Sorry, Matthew, I couldn't hear. Was there an issue with that LA flight right there?
No.
It may not be that particular one, but there are some and I met with Matt that there actually were some ones that were turning early and so they were going right basically in front of my neighbor's house more so than mine, but they as opposed to the ones that were more parallel, these are right basically in front of me, and that had not been happening. So that's it, that those actually are turning too soon.
To answer Tracy's question, what we've seen from time to time, and this happens pretty much on a daily basis, is that the eastern runway, rather than sometimes some of the aircraft will turn out eastbound, some of them will cross back to the west. And on the center runway, rather than turning westbound, some of them will cross back to the east. And this is something that seems to be happening with international flights from what I can gather. But there has been, each day there's a small number of aircraft that are, I call it crisscrossing. Mm-hmm. Instead of going out where they normally would go, east or west, they cross back to the other direction. It happens a few times.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'll go back and check on that. My son says it's probably just about congestion on departing runways, but I'll go back and check on that question. Can I also ask about Concorde? Is there any data on this platform that would identify a flight landing at JDF?
No, negative. It's this program is only designed to work from CLT, only arrivals and departures coming from Charlotte. And Tracy, yeah, you're correct. The other theory that was floated about why we're seeing that crisscross is because of the fact that based on clearances, aircraft receive flight clearances, and those flight clearances sometimes there's not enough room on one particular runway, so air traffic control might have to send them over to the other one to get them off on time. Those flight clearances are very tight. They have specific times that they need to be off the ground, and if air traffic control doesn't have a spot on the east runway, they might move them over to the west and vice versa. So that's most likely why it's happening, because of busy.
And back to the Concorde question, how many requests are you seeing on an annual basis that are specific to Concorde versus Charlotte? And is it worth acknowledging that somewhere on the website for folks who might call it?
No, not at all. Actually, we're pretty much getting nothing. The one lady that I spoke to this past year was complaining about a helicopter. I think maybe last year there was one other gentleman that was complaining about a very specific Part 135 carrier. 135 is air taxi.
and they were saying that this 135 carrier was buzzing his house, but he was up in Concord, so it didn't fall into the Charlotte purview, although they tried to blame it on our air traffic controllers. But fact of the matter is that I think this past year we have heard two Concord complaints, and one was a helicopter, so pretty much nothing.
Okay, thanks. Something to keep tracking, given the addition of Breeze at Concord and a new maintenance base and activity up there. So just want to be sure that that stays on our radar.
Yeah, sure, Dave. Absolutely.
Thanks.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Thank you, Matt. I do encourage everyone to check it out. If you haven't spent any time on it, it's very helpful.
Anything else from CLT before you go to additional business? Okay. In terms of additional business, we do have a request motions document, which is page 29. I'll cover some of these. I'll just walk through briefly. CLT may want to interject as well. First request for action was for y'all to submit an interest in ACR chair. It sounds like that may not be in need moving forward based on the changing mission and structure we heard. Sharing the HMMH slate update that Gene presented in October, I sent that out about a week or two after the last meeting. Identify operational differences between the recent north and south flow months. Is there any update, Stuart, that you want to share on that? The third request for motion or request for action was to look at some of the predominant south flow months last year, particularly June, compared to the north flow months, see if there were operational differences in, say, different flow.
The reason why that's particularly challenged from our side of the fence is that we don't know what the operational differences are. Because the tower and TRACOM are making those decisions, they're not sharing that data with us. So the only way that I could possibly know what would be changing from day to day, whether it be winds aloft, ground congestion situations, IFR instrument conditions requiring north flow for the use of ground-based navigation, any of those things, unless the tower were sharing with me, I would have no way of necessarily being able to guess that. And going back, to last year, that I would have no access to any of that data because even the aviation weather is gone. There's no way for me to look it up.
Jacob?
Yeah, this question came up because I remember June was an unusually high flow, southern flow month, very rare event. And when we asked about flow, the general comment is that there's ramp congestions, operational problems, all sorts of issues. Nobody can share the data, nobody can back it up. Statements, different things. And so the question really was trying to get at, okay, there you had a month where you were running in the south flow a whole lot. So presumably there was lots of congestion, lots of leak fights, things were canceled, disasters, or was it not? I mean, did the airport run for, I've never really noticed that the airport run for bikes fly a lot. Sharon fly as much as well, but I didn't really notice it. Like, oh boy, it's south flow, man, leak fights, everything. So the question is, okay, here's a month. Is there any data that there is that there's a problem?
Without getting into long technical explanations, we have six runways. And the reason why I say we have six is even though there's three, we have north and we have south. On each of these runways is something called an instrument landing system. And ILSs come in different categories. Category 1, 2, and 3. Unfortunately, we only have category 2 and 3 available on all three northbound runways. We only have one category 2 and 3 available going south. So if we're in a situation where TRACOM and the tower wants to be able to use the approaches with the lower altitudes in the form of ILS category 2 and 3, they have to go north. So that's probably one of the primary reasons why you'll see a lot of north flow. Because for them, it's easier to just put the aircraft onto the ILS, category 2 and 3 going north, and on days when the weather's questionable, that's basically what they're going to do because they need to use the runways with predominant instrument landing systems that work for them.
No, maybe I don't understand it, but my understanding of the ILS system is visibility conditions. Which is what percentage of the time would you say that there's low visibility? has been out for a while. And the answer might be they run the airport manager's farm. I actually expect that to be the answer. And somebody can just confirm the airport manager's farm. Do you experience any more weakness than usual? There's absolutely no adverse condition back to the airport when it ran itself. Well, that's a useful piece of information. If it was adverse effect from running itself, that also makes it.
Thank y'all for that. In terms of the motion, the first one y'all passed last meeting was creating the talking points, and y'all did that, created and voted on the talking points document for the council meeting. The last one was you voted to send a request to the FAA, a reply to the FAA in response to their response to your FOIA request. That was actually submitted by Phil, so I don't know if you've heard back other than the initial acknowledgement to the FOIA request.
Confirming as we speak. No,
that's still happening. That's still confirmation.
I was hopeful.
No, we're still pending.
Okay. Is there any new business anybody would like to share or bring to the group? Okay. Bill, would you like to seek a motion to adjourn?
Would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn?
I'll do that. Before that, I have a quick question. Can this celebration happen to be in Charlotte? Can we go, like...
It will be very, very, very close to the airport.
Thank you.
Move to adjourn.
How about Disney World? Properly moved by Mark, seconded by some. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That passes. We are adjourned.
Thank you very much.